What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp here. It is Wednesday, April 11th. We are in the home stretch of WrestleMania week. Posted on Twitter a little bit ago that I think WWE has posted about 24 hours worth of video content. I mean, that's just network stuff and broadcast. That doesn't include their YouTube videos, all that good stuff. And we're not far behind. I did a show. I did a show Friday. I did two shows Saturday. I did two shows Sunday. I did a show Monday. One on Tuesday. I'm doing two today. We're wrapping it up. This is it. Your boy is running on fumes. This is the Fightful Select Q&A podcast. I want to thank all of you who subscribe to Fightful Select. I want to give you your money's worth every single month. And I can tell you that this is upped my show number to about 30 a month. I'm doing 30 shows a month, and I would rather be here than anywhere else. So I want to thank you all so much for that. Let's get right into it. We've got some questions, and I'm going to answer them. The first one is, after the destruction of the Usos and New Day again, it seems like AOP would be slated to face them as SmackDown has no one else. I know the working theory was AOP versus Braun, but after the lack of partner, I'd rather see the SmackDown Haas battle. Where do you think the tag divisions are going? I think the Usos are going to get moved to Raw. Alex and I have spoken about this several times on the post-Raw podcast, but it makes too much sense to have Samoa Joe and the Authors of Pain against Roman Reigns and the Usos. The Usos are probably Roman Reigns' best chance to get over, and even then it's going to be tough against Samoa Joe because the people love Samoa Joe, man. It's their... They just like him, and you got to go with him. Now, the Usos can transition from heel to face pretty seamlessly, but I think that they do that in order to keep that feud going without having to pin a lot of Samoa Joe or pin a lot of Roman Reigns. And we know that Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns happens at Backlash, but, man, those would be some banging six-man tag team matches. And it's a way – see, the thing is, I don't think that Rezar and Occam should be pinned a whole lot. Maybe they get counted out, maybe anything. I think that they should be built stronger than Roman Reigns, because if you have a God-level tag team like that, you can really build the tag team division into an attraction. That's what they did with the Shield. The Shield were God-level attractions. They weren't getting beat. Roman Reigns, I think, got beat once or something, but they had a lot of confidence in that brand or that group, and because of that, the tag team division around it, like, I looked forward to Team Hell No facing them. I looked forward to the Usos facing the Shield. So I think you can really do that with the likes of the Authors of Pain as well, and they should do that. As far as the other brand or the other teams, I think the Club got to move on, maybe even Balor too, but put them on SmackDown. They need a completely fresh start. I think they've been on Raw since the beginning. Give them their fresh start. Let them run as baby faces. Let them enjoy, because New Day versus the Club could be a lot of fun. The Revival, I don't think you move all these teams, because if you move too many teams, then you're just in the same situation you were before. But the Revival should definitely be implemented a little bit better too. But other than that, you got to piece together teams. You're going to keep the Shining Stars and Heath Slater and Rhino, so these teams have other teams to beat. Next question. I thought your comment about what makes Zack Sabre Jr.'s style so appealing, despite being old school, fascinating, that being the speed in which he works it. I never thought about that being such a key factor. I enjoyed CWC's Jack Gallagher's similar style before it was slower and easier to follow, because it was slower and easier to follow. It seemed exaggerated for the show, but to great comedic effect. Do you know where Zack Sabre Jr. trained and if he trained MMA? I don't know if he trained MMA, but I know that, God, I think it was Kanemoto or somebody that got him into kickboxing, and he started to train by the time he was 14, and he did a lot of wrestling training. And I mean, if you're, I assume he's about 28 now. I'll take a glance real quick. He's 30 now, so he's been training for 16 years. He's been learning this for 16 years. When you learn that style for 16 years and you never stop learning like he has, then you become that good at it. I don't know if he has any extensive MMA training outside of his catch-as-catch-can wrestling. I can tell you that Jack Gallagher trained with Billy Robinson, and Billy Robinson trained Shayna Baszler, Josh Barnett, Kazushi Sakuraba. But I mean, Jack Gallagher went to a seminar rather because my wrestling coach was there. That was a tidbit that I found out this week. He sent me a picture and I think it's a 21-year-old Jack Gallagher was there, and man, he looked like he was 14. Any trustworthy information on Alberto's departure from Impact? No. They're playing it close to the vest if it is a work. I had always suspected it to work because they wanted him to be the new Loose Cannon. They wanted him to be the new Pillman so bad. But he's not. And the thing is, you can't portray a guy as being the new Loose Cannon when your show airs 8 weeks after you tape it. You can just edit his antics out. He can't be that for you. He is not that wild man. I mean, he is that wild man. But not he's not going to be that on screen for what you want. However, I don't think El Patron offers them anything except for a big chunk of budget gone. If he no-showed, whatever. I don't want to see him back in WWE. I don't want to see him in Impact. Don't even really want to see him on Lucha Underground, to be honest with you. I don't want to see him on any of those shows. I'm moved past him. Maybe a one-off. I don't want him. Impact saying it's legit. They changed their main event of their redemption show to Aries versus Pentagon versus Phoenix. That'll be a good one. I'll be watching that. Who do I think are the top contenders for NXT to graduate to Raw and SmackDown? Well, we saw that this week. And to be honest with you, I thought those were some of the top contenders. Even No Way Jose. And I know a lot of people will be like, well, what? Well, you know, sometimes you don't need a starting pitcher as much as you need a mop-up reliever or a long reliever. If you get that 5-run lead, you need somebody who will hold on to that 5-run lead. And No Way Jose, I've said this before, ultimate show starter. I've never been to a show that he's been at where the crowd just doesn't go bananas when he comes out. And that's what you want. That's what you want out of your first guy that they see every single night. So I think that if he has a couple years run on TV, he can pop up here and there, and you keep him on live events. And it's something that I don't know that I understood that well until I saw him do it, because he's one of the best I've ever seen at doing it. The Iconics, Peyton Royce and Billy Kay, I have heard that Vince McMahon has been high on them for a while, and I would imagine that the SmackDown appearance that they had only led to that being accentuated even further. Because, I mean, my God, they were perfect last night. Authors of Pain, they're not there on the mic. Holy cow. I don't know if you all saw that Paul Ellering promo, but it was bad with Paul Ellering backstage. However, as far as a Big Sirloin Beef Sons of Bitches thing goes, yeah, they like him. Or he likes them. So yeah, they are an optimal call-up. As far as other people, well, there's a lot. Honestly, it would not have surprised me to have seen EC3 just pop up after the ladder match, because not only is he main roster ready, he's been on the main roster before. However, I think right now that's the right spot for him. Looking up and down, I could have seen Bianca Belair just get the jump, just go ahead and been pulled on up without any extended NXT run. A lot of people were like, oh, Ciampa and Gargano. No, they have story to tell. They have story to tell. Ono isn't going to go up. He's a player coach from what I understand. Sanity was one that I thought would get the call up because they have a couple Big Sirloin Beef Sons of Bitches. They have Eric Young, who could get heat and is main roster ready, and Nikki Cross, who has been main roster ready for a while and would be a real help to that women's division. So those are some of the ones that I think would be best. I was looking forward to Shinsuke Nakamura versus AJ Styles, but it didn't quite live up to the high expectations most had. Do you think that's due to them setting up the heel turn and saving a barn burner for a SummerSlam or Money in the Bank? I would think you would want to lay it out at WrestleMania, but with a less than stellar build leading to the heel turn, that may be the next step. I think the Nakamura that we've seen is the Nakamura we're getting. Maybe his style will be a little stiffer now that he's a heel, but I didn't particularly like his NXT matches that much. I know a lot of them did, like, had got good reception. I wasn't a big fan of them. Except for the Zayn match. That was his intro, and I think that he peaked there. And I think that what we've seen on the main roster is just the Nakamura we're getting. That being said, I've not seen a heel match out of him in years. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's saving that for his heel run. And based on what we saw last night, his heel run looks very promising. I think they're leading to something at SummerSlam or Money in the Bank for him, something big. Because he looks like he could be a top flight heel. And he isn't really somebody that I had imagined as a top flight heel. But if it changes his work for the better and makes him more aggressive, I'm all for it. It's just, man, it's been one disappointment after the other for him, and that's sad. When you take a look at how the majority of matches were either sold on the idea of a match will sell itself like it was on Sunday, we'll let YouTube do that. So then my questions are, okay, I didn't quite understand that, sorry. Is the social media team the same group of people who work with TV that put these highlight reels, like the Shinsuke Nakamura content, together? And why is it they'll spend so long to not attempt to tell a more consistent narrative that fills certain holes in either week of anywhere but television or on the actual day of the show? Is it time constraints or is it laziness on WWE's part? Sometimes WWE just overlooks it. No, the social media, there are different departments within the social media department. Some that produce videos, some that put out tweets, some that do research. There are a lot of different people there. Is it laziness on WWE's part? Not necessarily the people who put this stuff together. Well, a lot of those people don't even know that much about wrestling. And I know that's wild to think, but that's the truth. A lot of these people go in there and they don't have an extended history or background or education on the history of pro wrestling. They are just talented producers. There's a guy who one of my best friends roomed with at Morehead State University, but way back in 2006. And my friend messaged me the other day and said, "Hey, did you hear, have you spoken to so-and-so lately?" And I was like, "Man, I haven't spoken to him in 10 years. And my friend said, "I figured he was one of your sources." And I'm like, "What do you mean one of my sources?" And my friend said, "Oh yeah, he works for WWE's graphic department." And this was last year, I believe. I found this out around Great Balls of Fire, because we made the joke that somebody I knew put balls on Tozawa's face. But he didn't have any, he didn't know what wrestling was. I'm pretty sure he thought wrestling was stupid back in like 06, 07. And to be honest, it kind of was. WWE was in a dark period. But he didn't have any really extensive wrestling knowledge back then, but he creates graphics now, and he does that for WWE. So that's just the boat they're in a lot of times. They want somebody that's fit for the job, but wrestling knowledge doesn't necessarily exclude you from that. I mean, that doesn't exclude you from being a wrestler. Plenty of the wrestlers don't have any idea what's going on. Next question, was Lesnar retaining the original plan or an in-match call? Okay, boy, this is a big one. Might get me heat with some people, but whatever. The decision to change Roman Reigns from Brock Lesnar, that happened either late last week or Sunday. It did not happen during the match. There may be some production. There may be something that leads you to believe. They may have even been told, say it was during the match. It was not during the match. Brock Lesnar has had a deal. He's had a deal. Whether there were any more dates on it, yes, there were. Or else Vince McMahon would not have had that guy go over in his WrestleMania main event. He is not putting somebody over that he thinks will risk leaving his title out in the cold. He just does not do that. A lot of people that I talked to thought that the Vince Lesnar thing was a work. Backstage, Lesnar throwing the belt. We'll see, but there were cameras around, so we'll find out more information on that. the Lesnar in ring deal, like that's all due respect to the guy who reported it, but that's not how they do it for the WrestleMania main event. Vince knew the reaction was going to be bad. They tried. He knew by that time of, they had other shows there where Roman got booed on the screen. He knew. Brock Lesnar wasn't the original plan, but he was the plan going in to win that match. Don't let anybody tell you any different. Even Brock! There was a huge odds shift before the match. That doesn't happen. You can't bet during the match. You shouldn't be able to. It's just baffling to me that people think that that's the deal. I don't know, man. Do you think Dana White will attempt to get Ronda back in the UFC in the future, depending on the popularity of her WWE run? I don't think Dana White will, because Dana White's thing has always been when you're done, you're done. And for all the negatives you can say about Dana White and the way that he treats fighters and all that, he does say, if somebody comes up to me and they says they're done fighting, I don't ask them to fight again. And that's okay. Now, if somebody in the cage says, yeah, I think this is my last fight, we'll go home, we'll see, then he'll see if they want to fight. But if it's somebody who, like Ronda, who seems to have moved on and says, I want to move on, then he lets them move on. That being said, I think I would be surprised if Ronda didn't fight at least one time again. Because a lot of athletes like that, man, they get those competitive urges and it's really, really difficult to satisfy. Some people have it satisfied via pro wrestling. Matt Riddle did. Matt Riddle doesn't have any desire to fight. The man was really close to being a top 15 welterweight in the UFC if they had rankings back then. Look at Matt Riddle. He had won 5 fights in a row with the exception of a couple fights that were overturned due to marijuana. Jesus, give me a break. That would have put him on the fringe of the top 15, and he just doesn't want to fight anymore. Hasn't fought in the UFC in 5 years, doesn't have any real desire to. I interviewed him before his last fight. Asked him about pro wrestling. He hadn't even trained yet, but he was like, yeah, maybe I'll do that. And since then, he hasn't needed to fight or grapple or do any of that. Do I think Reigns goes over at the Greatest Royal Rumble over Brock Lesnar? Yes, I don't think he wins the Greatest Royal Rumble, although I wouldn't be surprised if he's in it, because they got to find 50 guys to put in that thing. Man, somebody is giving them an awful lot of money for this show, aren't they? That shows up on the Q2 reports. That would be a fun one to report. What a mess. Apologize for the cough, guys. You get what you pay for. Is it true they're going to portray Balor as a gay superstar? If so, why would they force that gimmick on him and not bring up someone like Velveteen Dream who could pull it off seemingly better? If it's true, is this good for Balor? Maybe they just see him as being over enough with the fans to spin the gay thing into a positive light. Or is it Vince just screwing with him the same way they make him forcefully smile all the time? Wow, lots to go into there. There's no need to spin a gay thing into a positive light. Homophobic people are terrible. If you can't deal with looking at a rainbow in somebody's gear, I don't know what to tell you. I don't think they're going to portray Balor as a gay superstar, but he has been a friend to the LGBT community for, God, 7-8 years. He's worn stuff that has pretty much indicated that. They don't make him do anything with his entrance. That's one of the few things that WWE controls very little of in a superstar, is what goes on in their entrance, what goes on in their gear. I mean, they have to approve a lot of stuff. Velveteen Dream's not gay. And I don't know if Finn Balor's gay or not. I have no idea. There were rumors he dated Kathy Kelly. I don't care if he's gay. They want to portray him as a gay superstar and he wants to portray it. That's not Vince screwing with him. I mean, Finn Balor wanted to do the rainbow on the gear, from my understanding. I mean, he's done tons of stuff like that before. So It's not a rib. It's not a punishment. It's not anything. It's not negative. It's not bad. I don't know why anybody would think that it's bad. Balor wanted to do it, and they did it. There you go. Just Sonya Deville did it. I mean, Sonya Deville's gay, but she wore rainbow-colored gear. And you don't see a lot of people saying, oh, they're going to push this gay character. Well, it's not an issue with her. Why is it an issue with him? Do you know what the female superstars will be doing during Greatest Royal Rumble? Sitting on their at home, I hope, because they deserve a nice weekend off. I would have liked for them to have ran a Saturday event that's all female. I think that could have done well somewhere with the amount of talent they have. Look at the talent they have. You run a Saturday all-female show in America, and you don't even have to televise it, but put it in Orlando or something where you know it'll get a crowd. But Sasha Banks versus Bayley, you can run back Asuka versus Charlotte at WrestleMania. You got Becky Lynch, and you can have her against Carmella for the title. So that's three big matches right there. You've still got Natalya, Naomi. You can do Riot Squad versus Absolution. You can do that as like a co-branded type of deal. Like, I really would have done that. I would have done that. And maybe even have your girl Rousey show up if she's available. Ember Moon is out there. The Iconics are there. Oh, forgot about Alexa. You can run an all-women show. I would bet dollars to donuts they eventually do run an all-women show. And they should. Also, if WWE is all about inclusion, Prince's money sure is changing that narrative. Yeah, it is. That's all I have to say is I don't know how much money it is. It has to be a ton of money. It has to be so much money that I'm like, okay, guys, not to make this about me, I love doing what I do for a job. I have been offered significant raises elsewhere, which I have passed up to stay here because I like it so much. I mean, significant. They are flying over 50 guys there, 50 wrestlers, not to mention the staff. They're bringing back Undertaker. They're bringing back Chris Jericho. So I look in my mind and I'm like, okay, I don't have that much money. I get by. And even I was like, you know what? That money's not enough. Vince McMahon has all the money in the world, and he's the one who signed off on this. And even he was like, goddamn, pal, that's too much to pass up. So in my mind, me not having money, me being able to pass it up, him having all the money in the world and not being able to pass up Saudi Arabia, that leads me to indicate that this is game-changing type of money. Just comparing my mindset to a Vince McMahon's, which are nothing similar. There you go. Enjoy. But yeah, it's enough money for them to say, we're willing to take a few bullets to the chest on that that deal. That's just, whoo boy. If you're in the live chat, feel free to send in questions as well. I know that a lot of you aren't in the live chat. You come and watch this later. We're still growing. We have like 45, 50 subscribers, whatever. We're going to get to millions eventually. We'll talk to you all like WWE talks to their stockholders. We'll have millions of subscribers. We'll keep giving you the content no matter how many of you there are. Your discussion on the Triple H on the takeover call about Elias and some unexpected successes on the main roster reminded me of a comment by VOW's Joe Lanza, where he said that some acts are small room acts and others are large room acts. Elias was apparently a big room act that worked better on the main roster than an FC or FSU. Would you agree with this distinction explaining on how some talents do better than others when transitioning? Yeah, I would. And Joe is very, very good at what he does as well. There are just some that work out better like that, man. Adam Rose was a small room act and didn't work when he went into a big room. I think like a Randy Orton is like that. If he showed up on the indie circuit, there'd be nothing. I mean, if a guy like Randy Orton showed up on the indie circuit, there'd be like nothing. go to a live event, man, and you see the type of reaction that he gets, he's a big room act. There are just, that's the way it works. There are some people like a Matt Riddle, I hope, are a big room act too, because, man, he plays the hell out of those small rooms and he does it very, very well. There are a lot of cruiserweights who are small room acts and haven't made the transition to being a big room act. And I think you got to make that transition to connect with those bigger crowds. And I think that's the real good benefit of an NXT TakeOver, because some of these people, by the time they've gotten a TakeOver, they have never wrestled in front of 1,000 people. And TakeOver's giving them the opportunity to wrestle in front of 15,000 people after being in front of a few hundred at Full Sail all the time. So I can't speak enough to about how valuable that is to them. Elias did, but Triple H told me that he knew from the get-go Elias was going to be that Elias was going to be special, that Elias was going to be that big room act. I was trying to think of the analogy there that I wanted. What are some acts around the indies and NXT that might fall on either side of this? Ah, man. The indies. I think Matt Riddle can be a very RVD character. I really do. Priscilla Kelly, I think, can become a big room act. Other promotions, Ivelisse. I interviewed her, and I think that she could be one of the top WWE women's wrestlers in a big room. Because, okay, her gimmick is baddest bitch in the room, or baddest bitch in the game. I don't know. It's one of those. I interviewed her. A nice woman, but still when you talk to her, you hear in her voice, oh, okay, yeah, she knows that's what she is. She knows that that's what she can become in front of 15,000 people, and she wants that too. Go check out the Fightful Wrestling Weekly Early Access. It's up now on Fightful Select, but she wants that too. When Pat Fannin gave me the information that a couple of Lucha Underground departures happened, I was a little bit in my heart hoping it was somebody like Ivelisse. It was Angelico and Jack Evans. Good for Angelico. He could be good too. I think he could be what they wanted Justin Gabriel to be, not just because of the geographic thing, but because of the daredevil aspect. And Justin Gabriel had optimistic thoughts on that, but it just didn't work out for him. They tried to make it work in Global Force and Lucha Underground and Impact. It just didn't work for him. Who else do I think could fit that narrative? A lot of people didn't think Ronda Rousey was going to be a big room act on the main roster, and boy, God, was that wrong. That was just – what a shock that was. Ronda Rousey just took over that room. No Way Jose, big room act. He's also a small room act too, though, but big room act. EC3. He is one that is a big room act, but it works so well in a small room. Sanity is a big room act, in my opinion. I always tout their entrance. Their entrance is special. Go see it live, man. The helicopters, the spotlights, the masks, the darkness. Big room act. Bianca Belair, too. And Street Profits. Street Profits. One day Street Profits and they'll put Montez with Bianca if they stay together, and that'll be something really good. Miley sent this in. How many more years do you think WWE will continue to sell that Charlotte and Alexa are the best in the ring? I don't think they sell that Alexa's the best in the ring. WrestleMania should have been a complete squash. Charlotte, on the other hand, I think is more than competent in the ring, and I am all here for a Charlotte versus Ronda Rousey WrestleMania main event headliner. I want Charlotte to break all kinds of streaks. I want them to bring in a new girl, have her go undefeated for a few months, have Charlotte beat her on TV, do another streak with somebody else. Maybe they've won a bunch of pay-per-views in a row. Charlotte beats them. And then at WrestleMania, you have Ronda Rousey, who is winning the Royal Rumble, against Charlotte, who stops all the streaks. And you have streak versus title again. And there will be people who, I mean, not a lot of people will buy. Okay. I don't want to confuse you. Plenty of people will buy Charlotte. Plenty of people will buy Ronda Rousey. Keep that contract news quiet. Don't let people know what Rousey's doing afterwards. Run with it. Alexa is very character driven. I thought that she should have been absolutely squashed on WrestleMania as a bully. She should have just taken that L and moved along. She was the bully. Maybe she learned from her ways. She sat in the corner like a scalded dog, for a lack of a better term. But when Alexa comes back out the next night and does the same thing, it's like, man, she didn't learn anything. She didn't learn anything. There's no character development there. In the ring, I think she's passable. For what they want her to do, passable and getting better all the time. I don't think they've ever portrayed her as best in the ring. They've portrayed her as the champion because she was the champion. But you don't have to be the best to be a champion. We've seen some pretty crappy NCAA college teams make it pretty far in the tournament. They weren't the best teams, but they won on that night. And that's all that matters sometimes. I think that Alexa and Charlotte are viewed as stars. Quit making Alexa color her damn hair and make her look like a damn bag of Skittles. Make her look like a human. How about that? Any idea if Regal is okay? Yeah, I've heard that Regal's fine. I think he should be back tonight. Should be. But they had Triple H fill in for him, and he didn't even do anything. He was backstage, like, filming stuff. So I don't know if maybe they had him film something for tonight's NXT show. But they did have him, quote-unquote, filling in, which was a nice touch. But really, you didn't need Regal on that show at all, I don't think. Why no Hulk Hogan on the show? They're not ready for it. Maybe they would have, but I think the Moolah thing pushed it back. I think that happened. Man, if only Hogan had a buddy like that dude that's out there. There's a guy on YouTube who went out and interviewed like 10 to 15 Moolah supporters. Now, let me just say this. Whether I believe the Moolah accusations or not, just because a bunch of women weren't victimized weren't victimized doesn't mean that none were victimized. Also, some of them were just yeesh. And the guy didn't even the guy was complaining about biased journalism. I don't think he reached out to Mad Maxine. I don't know. I muted him long ago. And his buddy. But after that, they didn't want to bring Hogan back, I don't think. I mean, they haven't wanted to bring Hogan back for a while. And we've heard some conflicting things. At one point, we were told that the ball was in Hogan's court to return and that Vince was interested. However, given the way that the social landscape changed, I think last year, I mean, it changed in a hurry. Donald Trump got into office and a lot of things changed. People got a lot more extreme from one or the other. And I hope he feels bad for what he did because it was disgusting. And it was absolute jobber behavior. But they don't want to be associated with that. And I can't really blame them for not wanting to be associated with that. What are the odds of Roman turning heel between now and the next pay-per-view? Man, I don't know. The thing is, everybody says it. Roman needs a heel turn. Roman needs a heel turn. Then you got the people that are like, oh, he sells so much merch. He does this. He does that. Vince McMahon is sacrificing the quality of his own program to spite the audience. To say, this will get over. It will happen the way that I want it to. It's going to work. Man, far be it from me to tell Vince McMahon how to run his business, but God, man, it's not working. And now you're taking a person who might be too over as like a heel to be a babyface, and you're turning him into a guy who just might not be over. And I think that's dangerous because Roman Reigns is a special talent. I think he is a once in every 10, 15 year talent, just like a Daniel Bryan. However, he's not Daniel Bryan. People want to like Daniel Bryan because he's funny, he's charming, he is the underdog. Roman Reigns isn't the underdog. You can't call somebody the big dog and then also call him the underdog. Those are not the same ends of the spectrum. You can't do that. Come on, man. Was the hype for AJ Styles versus Nakamura just too high? It seems like that match failed to deliver in almost every way, or was I too tired and exhausted? No, I would agree with you. Match was okay. Never got out of second gear, in my opinion. I think there was just... And a lot of people said, oh, well, they didn't get as much match as their Tokyo Dome match. It was 4 minutes. 4 minutes. You can't adjust. That's part of the reason you got here, is that you learn to adjust in your career, in the ring, all that stuff. You learn to adjust. If you get 20 minutes on WrestleMania, over 20 minutes, that's good time. How many matches were on that were longer than that? I don't think many. Let me look. There was one match that was longer. That was the mixed tag, and it was longer by 20 seconds. They got one of the brightest stages. And I thought that AJ Styles and Nakamura both laid an egg, and I hate that because every freaking interview that AJ Styles has done for the last year or two, well, who's your dream opponent at WrestleMania? Well, I'd like to face Shinsuke Nakamura. We tore it up in Japan. I think we could tear it up here. I think it's more on Nakamura than Styles, but, you know, I don't know who called the match. I don't know who was the producer for the match. I don't know who handled all that, but I thought it was very disappointing. This was supposed to be the barn burner that we'd heard about since 2+ years ago. The match that essentially bid farewell to these two guys. Is Neville returning on Raw? Man, I don't know where everybody keeps getting this stuff. To my understanding, at least the last time I checked, which hasn't been for quite a while, the things hadn't progressed. Briefly, there were talks, but Neville didn't get necessarily what he wanted, and WWE wasn't interested in giving it to him. Now, the thing is, WWE values 205 Live more than Neville would like to admit, or than Austin Aries would like to admit, more than a lot of fans would like to admit. They like 205 Live. They like it being live because it has been pitched to go on before SmackDown when the crowd's hotter. But they like that. They like the talent on it. They hold it. I don't want to say a top priority because it's not a top priority, but it is a priority for them. They care about it. And I've said this time and time again, if they had their way, they would have Austin Aries, Neville, Enzo Amore, and Rich Swann all in that roster. And WWE, they've tried to make it work. They got screwed over with the Enzo thing. They kind of got screwed over with the Rich Swann thing. It's hard for me to tell considering the stuff with his wife and some stuff about her from last year's WrestleMania weekend. Austin Aries left. He'd like people to think he got fired, but conflicting reports on that as well. And Neville, they wanted Neville to be a guy there. However, they shouldn't have had him lose to Tozawa in a week, regain it. Odd. But it's just, they wanted 205 Live to work. And now they're stuck with a bunch of guys that don't necessarily have a lot of main roster exposure. And it doesn't have maybe the buzz that they wanted. I think that Buddy Murphy has done great things for that brand, even though he botched his finish last night. He's been doing that a little bit lately, and it sucks because I love that finish, man. That is some great, great creativity. So that's it. Q&A show complete. My God, hit you all with 40 minutes of them. 40 minutes of Q&As. Of course, you all can always ask me questions on Twitter. You all can ask questions at Fightful Select. I want to thank you all so much for being members of Fightful Select. It means a lot. If you would like to help us out some even more, just post on Twitter. Hey, I watched this show on Fightful Select. I really enjoyed it. Maybe you should, or maybe you would too. Check it out. Thank you all so much. Got that Fightful Weekender coming up this weekend. Next week, a new dark match commentary. It's going to be fun. We have that intro up for the listing, your boy, early. Also, let's see, what else is on the slate? Later this month, it's the return of the Members Only podcast. At the end of the month, I have another Fightful Q&A show. Yeah, so next week will be Members Only podcast, dark match commentary. Then the fourth week, we're going to have another Q&A show. And, of course, every week we have the Fightful Weekender. Jonathan Ma says, farewell to BTE. Get your damn tissues for the Weekender. I don't think that show's going anywhere, but we'll talk about that. Thank you, guys. We're out.